Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castagnini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. So I have a question for you. Have you ever found yourself spiraling in guilt over what you just ate? And even at that, maybe you've caught yourself in the end of the cycle of starting over on Monday or feeling like food rules, like just your entire life. Well, maybe this episode is for you then. I'm so excited to be joined by Mallory Page. She is a non-diet dietitian and the founder of Live Unrestricted. Through her programs, memberships, and her own podcast, Themes Like Diet Culture, she's helping people ditch the stress around food and body image so they can focus on what actually makes life joyful. Her approach, science-backed, refreshingly practical, and 100% free from shame. So today, we're cutting through the noise of diet culture, intuitive eating myths, and that sneaky little voice that keeps telling you you're doing it wrong. Because let's be honest, if all the rules, meals, plans, and self-control actually work, you wouldn't still feel stuck, right? So we're going to get into why just listening to your body isn't always that simple, or how diet culture keeps you thinking that you're the problem when you're not, and the real reason food feels so complicated and what to do about it. This is an open, insightful conversation that will challenge the way you think about food and body image while giving you the practical tools to create real, lasting change. So let's dive in. All right. Well, Mallory, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited too. I have been looking at your social media for a while and just excited to have a conversation. And, you know, like most of my guests, you have your own journey and history. And I'm just curious, for people who maybe don't know you, would you mind sharing a little bit about your own journey and your own experience?
Yeah, I like sharing my journey because I always say that it's a little unconventional, and also it's the prime example of what not to do, honestly, which is why I do what I do now. Because how my journey started, I think, mirrors what a lot of people experience. I was in high school, I was really competitive in sports, and I had a trainer that was just kind of casually saying, oh, maybe you should track what you eat, just write it down because your performance hasn't been as strong, which I knew, but at the time my perfectionistic self was truly so upset to hear him say that. And it honestly just kind of spiraled from that point for me, from being kind of just looking at what I ate to obsessing about the health of every single little thing. And as I went from high school into college and wasn't playing a sport and was on my own. And also this was the time when bikini competitions were really popular. So I was living for the what I eat in a days of those people. That really just kind of fueled the fire in a whole new way, where my exercise obsession merged with the wellness obsession. And it kind of went into full blown orthorexia, although I was not diagnosed, not that that's necessarily in the DSM-5, but I didn't ever get diagnosed formally with any of those things, but it was impeding upon my life significantly, especially because I had other mental health stuff that I was dealing with. So there could be so many things that I go into as an offshoot of where I was at, but just for at least the overarching view of the story, I hit basically a breaking point where my mental health was so horrible that I no longer could do the things that I used to do with my fitness and with the way I was eating, and my body image was horrible. And so from there is kind of when I started to claw my way out of that. And I used a number of different techniques from, therapists to medium and dietitians. And yeah, I was very stubborn, honestly, on my journey. So now, after going through all of that, I help people that I feel relate to my journey that have these other underlying things that contributed to it, not just the desire to change your body, and also that recognize that there's types of support that will be really helpful for them. Like, I was logical, but I wanted to feel understood. And at the same time, I just felt like I had all this stuff that I was looking for that probably was out there, but I was convincing myself wasn't. So that's the very quick explanation of my journey, because I think I could go on forever, but I'll start there before diving even deeper.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I was kind of, for people who can't see this, maybe you're not watching, I was a little bit smiling because I always say I was like really stubborn with my journey too, which I think is common for people. And I'm just curious, as you were thinking back, do you think that was resistance or like what do you think your stubbornness was about?
So many things. I do think resistance certainly came up. I remember when I sought a therapist my second year into college, and she was so wonderful. And the only thing I would talk to her about was stuff that was entirely unrelated to food. And she would kind of try to, bring it up. And I would say, no, I don't have any issues with that. I was so in denial about it. So there's that piece of it. And then I think that there was a feeling that I should be able to get out of it on my own because I was becoming a dietitian and I had studied everything with nutrition. And so that came up. And then I think, due to the nature of having orthorexia, I really struggled with the fact that I felt like everything I was doing was to be healthy. And the idea of recovery felt like the antithesis of being healthy, despite the fact that now I, of course, know that's not the case. At the time, it took a lot of mindset changes to help me to start to see that.
So it's, you mentioned it's not in the DSM-5, right? And so I think there is this confusion around like what's quote unquote healthy and wellness. It gets very like confusing and like where's the line drawn between I'm doing all this and following all the influencers and looking at what's online and this is what I'm supposed to be doing and quote unquote should be doing and this is healthy versus like where's it? Like, when did you feel like you had that light bulb moment? Or I don't know if it was a light bulb moment, but where it was like, wait a minute, this is actually crossing a line into something that's disordered and it's not me being well, or it's not quote unquote healthy anymore.
There's this one memory that I have that is so set in my mind where I think I realized potentially for the first time. And I was walking, this is my freshman year, and I was walking up these stairs. There was like five stairs to get up to my lab. And I obviously, prided myself on being so fit because I was obsessed with exercise. And yet, I was trudging up the stairs so slowly that all these people were having to move around and pass me because I was that exhausted that I could not even walk up the stairs and was out of breath by the end. And I just remember sitting there and thinking, this doesn't really make sense. If I'm doing all this stuff to be so healthy, and yet I feel this way. And yet, I would love to say that that light bulb moment then created a shift in my actions. It didn't. So it definitely gradually occurred that I had more of those moments. But that's one of the main ones that I remember that started the process of thinking that.
So I'm wondering, like the people you work with now, do they come to you thinking, oh, right, like I'm so fit, I'm being so healthy? Like, how do people come to you? Like, at what point are they coming to get your like help or advice or?
Yeah, something that I felt really passionate about was helping people that felt like they had already taken a lot of steps to get better, and yet they recognized that they weren't experiencing the full food freedom and body acceptance they wanted. So a lot of the time it's, okay, well, I eat more things, but I'm still thinking about it a lot, and I still feel guilty. Or, yeah, I'll have some good body image days, but then I'll look in the mirror and I feel like I'm having a breakdown about the way that I look, and a number of other things along those lines. So it's interesting because many women that come to me are in this kind of conundrum where they have this level of awareness around often kind of why they're doing what they're doing and what they're doing, and often too what they want to feel. But it's that fear of what they believe it's going to take in order to get to the freedom that usually stops them. Letting go of control, feeling afraid of weight gain, feeling like people won't accept them. Some of those deeper seated things that we experience that then lead to so much fear because we don't want to be rejected by society or by ourselves.
So, I mean, as you're talking, a whole bunch of things kind of popped in my mind, but what are some of the things you commonly hear that people are afraid that they have to do in order to like get better or to get into that place where they feel different?
A lot of people fear having to do something in such an extreme way. I do have some people that come to me after going to treatment, and they're such different spaces when you're in a treatment space versus when this person would be coming to me. So sometimes they feel like it's going to go from where they're at to a whole other extreme. And I explain to them, we're in a different scenario now. We can take steps in a little bit more of a gradual manner. So that's one of them. I think another one is just feeling like they're going to lose themselves, that their identity is so based in exercise and how they eat and what will people then think of them and who will they become. So that's definitely a fear. And then I also find that a lot of people at this stage, they just want to feel like they have a sense of agency and autonomy in their choices and worry that those things aren't going to be granted to them. And those are some of the ones I see, but there's so many. So I'd be curious to hear what you find too.
Yeah, I mean, and I can speak from my own experience too. Like a lot of my identity was wrapped up in being the quote healthy one, the fit one, the athlete, the all of that. And I felt like, oh my gosh, who am I going to be after this, right? Because there was this like, am I going to be able to do any of this anymore? It's like it was felt like it was so enwrapped in the disorder and the illness. It was like, what does that look like anymore? And it was this fear, right? If I'm doing this, is it still I'm sick or is it not? And I don't know if you went through that too, but I think a lot of people grapple with that as like, okay, if I'm, eating something that's I was considered, like my eating disorder food, but I'm eating it because I like it. Am I still in my disorder? Or like if I'm eating foods that I really do enjoy eating, but it was on my quote unquote bad food list or whatever, my challenge food list. Like that's scary because, associating that so much with, to your point, you said like weight gain or like what it is, so what the illness associated it with, or like, with orthorexia, associating it with like getting ill or like lack of health. And so just all of those challenges of like wanting to live a life with, to your point, food freedom and like wanting to not have the labels. But because those things were so ingrained, it's like really facing those challenges. And, I think the eating disorder mind tells you like, oh, if you do these things, your body is going to look such a different way. And like, I can't control what's going to happen to my body. Right. And I hear that from people all the time. It's like, I'll go into treatment. I'll work with you as a therapist, and I'll do all these things, but I've worked so hard. I've done all this work to look like this or to get to this point. I'll lose all that hard work if I, my body shifts and changes. So as long as I don't gain weight, I'll go into therapy, right? And I don't know if you hear that too, but that's like the number one thing I hear is this fear of like, I want to get better, I want to feel better, I want to eat what I want to eat without fear, but I don't want to gain any weight.
Yeah, I would say the same thing that comes up as the number one fear. And then, like you said, the offshoots of that, which I often find are feeling like you're out of control, if your body is changing and how frustrating that can be. And also the fear of, okay, well, then I'm going to become unhealthy. It's all the places our mind takes the perceived idea of what's going to happen to our body to mean. And it definitely goes into all the things that you are saying about food for the people I work with as well. And that's so much of what we talk about is the stuff that comes after you're eating food, maybe, right? Like you're eating different foods. It's like, okay, well, I'm eating foods I never had. But if the whole time underneath that you're thinking, is this bad? Should I not have eaten this? Or should I eat this? What does it mean about me? Then it doesn't feel peaceful. It doesn't feel like that full freedom.
Absolutely. Right. And I didn't grow up with social media, so this has to be just mind-boggling for people going through this right now, treatment and trying to get better with all of, to your point, the influencers and what I eat in a day and all the messaging, because it's just like you're swimming in it, right? There's so many messages about, what's healthy, what's well, what's all these things, right? So, and I'm very realistic with people. It's like you talk to me for X number of minutes a week, and then you go out into the real world and hear all these conflicting messages from what we talk about. And that's got to be really hard.
Yeah, I do find that social media makes a big impact, and it's pretty fascinating too to see how it can impact people at different ages. I don't know if this is something that you see. I was working with a 14-year-old a couple months ago, and I remember her telling me, she said, "When I look at the stuff on social media, I know that it's false, and yet I still want to look like that person, so I still care." Or she also shared that even if she knows it's not true, if her friends are following it, she doesn't want to feel like she was ostracized or not accepted. And I have some clients like that, but it's just interesting to hear from such a young age that's coming up. And then I have other clients that feel like it grips them at such a deep, even subconscious level, that it's like they're operating from that programming, from being sent this messaging for so many years, that it feels like they're going against the very nature of health and wellness and societal acceptance by trying to have freedom. So it's so interesting how it can show up.
Yeah, and it's really what you said it well. It's like not wanting to be ostracized, not wanting to be rejected, and I think that's really what it comes down to. It's like this belief of, that's really the fear.
Exactly. And I also find a lot of the people that come to me, they are really into intellectualizing their emotions. They're extremely smart. I'm sure you see this often. They know all the things. But I've often explained to them that it's not, if you feel that mentally or you hear it in your head, you can tell yourself all these logical things, but your body doesn't feel the same. It's just in fight or flight or freeze, and you're stressed out the whole time. It's not always going to sink in. It's not going to feel that way. And so that's a lot of, I often find what is so important in these stages too, is helping to connect what you're thinking and maybe knowing to how you're actually feeling, because otherwise the dissonance can just create so much distress, especially as we try to change habits more or to take on new mindsets. So it's such an interesting way that those two things can interact with each other too.
What do you find people are most challenged with in terms of like what they're fearing with? Is it more of like the changes in their body, like what you work with specifically? Is it more like challenging themselves to like with the food?
It's a really good question, because I do think that each person has slightly different presentations, because some people it does come more down to their fear around not being healthy. And obviously, you can see, well, their body changing to them can often signify that. But sometimes they're less concerned about that and more concerned about the food and how it's going to physically make them feel. But I would say the majority of people, the deeper fear is their body changing and what that signifies, even outside of health. And on a less conscious level for them, but on a more provider level for me, I often see too that the thing that's the most distressing for them is the actual emotions that are coming up as they start to change their habits, or as they start to either have or perceive their body changing. Because I find for many of my clients, this has become or is their number one way of coping with things. So it's hard when we're then removing, in a way, the way that they're coping while also increasing their need for ways to cope with what they're dealing with.
Yeah, so for anyone who's maybe doesn't understand that, like, how could you explain, like, what do you mean by they're using this to cope?
Yeah, so I'll use my journey just as a quick tangent because I find it's helpful. And I didn't know this at all when I was going through my disordered eating. But when my disordered eating started, it wasn't just because I wanted to change my body, although my body became an obsession for me. It was because I was entirely overwhelmed and I felt out of control in my life. I felt like I could not handle all the stresses and I felt like I struggled with my identity. And so, next thing you know, food and controlling my body comes in, and I think, well, this is just wonderful. I eat multiple times a day, and now I can control what that is, and I can control my body. And I also have this thing that people can focus on, right? I can now be this healthy person, and that protects me in a way. And so, that served me at the time because it felt like it helped me to control like these emotions that felt really out of control for me. So in a more tangible sense, it's almost like a lot of the times you could say, okay, well, I'm feeling like I'm not accepted, or I'm feeling sad, or I'm feeling anxiety and or stress. And then the next thing you know, you find yourself fixating on every piece of your meal and you're distracted. And that's often what my clients experience it as, or they experience it as the opposite, where they notice, oh, well, now that I am trying not to do this, it's bringing up my stress and anxiety. But of course, that's a natural part of the process, and we can do it in a way that's not too overwhelming. You know, we can take little steps so it doesn't feel so intense, like every emotion is coming at you all at once.
That's very true, right? Because it's like all that's been like numbed out, or you haven't been dealing with it, and so it can't it, to the point, like, so how do you handle that if somebody does maybe feel really overwhelmed and they're like wanting to go back to like counting things or logging things or like sticking to like a very regimented like routine with food or exercise?
Yeah, I do think that, again, I'll just emphasize, obviously, I have the ability in my position where people aren't coming to me in this place of medical instability. So there's not this risk to taking it in a little bit more of a gradual approach. So let's say that I was working with someone and they started to feel extremely overwhelmed. I would, of course, just make sure that I'm understanding where that's coming from, why it's coming up, so that we can really get to the root of what triggered that amount of overwhelm. And depending on it, I would take a step back if we needed to. Let's say we're setting goals or something and that's what's coming up, then we can always adjust. But then I think the other thing that I've found to be extremely important is throughout that process as well, no matter what, whether it's become overwhelming or not, is infusing things that help to add joy, help to cope, help to support them emotionally. And it's honestly one of my favorite things to see how much just doing some of these things that they used to love to do or finding other ways to support themselves can lead to a lessening of the intensity of stress or desire to move back into old habits like the ones that you were saying or anything else for that matter.
I'm actually curious too, like you were saying, for yourself, oh gosh, I know everything about the nutrition. I know everything about the food. How many times do people come in and they're like, I know everything about the food. I don't need to talk about that. Like, just curious.
A lot of the time, for the people that are working with me, just because of the nature of where they're at in their journey, or because a lot of them could deal with orthorexia or past calorie counting. And so they feel like they've got a whole log in their head with everything. But in my program that I have is kind of my main program, the information kind of goes at it from a different angle and will try to infuse things that maybe challenge some of the beliefs that they have without it feeling oppressive either. So I had a client the other day that said it felt like it was washing her brain, which I thought was the coolest thing. And I think that sometimes, of course, I allow them to have agency and I hear them what they're saying, but I say, well, maybe we can try and see what it feels like to get different information. And I find sometimes they feel like it is providing something they haven't heard, even though they think they know everything, you know? Because knowing everything about nutrition is an interesting thing to, when you look at how much information there is out there and how it often all conflicts.
It does. It's crazy, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you look at like one like way of eating that's like, oh, this is it, right? And then you'll like Google another one and it's so counter to that one and it's like, okay, hold on.
Oh, exactly. That's always what I say to people is they say, okay, well, I just want to know exactly what is right and what is wrong. And I always say that food is not like a class where you can get an A to an F scale. It's like a relationship. And just like any relationship, even though we all may have different or similar qualities that we're looking for of respect and love, there's going to be different ways that that needs to look for each and every one of us to have that relationship truly thrive. So I can't say exactly what it is that you're going to want because you are an individual that's different than me with a different body. And so we have to understand how we figure out what that looks like for you, which going all the way back to what you were saying before, sometimes is eating foods that you actually did like during your eating disorder. And you're like, whoa, this is weird. I didn't know I was going to have this. And then sometimes it's eating foods that you were convinced were the worst foods and you would never like, and everything in between. So it's just that flexibility that I find is so key, and that individualization as well.
Yeah, it's what do you think it is that people get so stuck on like the calories? Because I find that so much people are like, no, this is my ceiling, this is the number, and I don't even know where they get the number. I know, like, I'm old, so like there was a certain number that's like, this is what a pound equals. Like, I'm not gonna get there because I don't want to talk numbers, but like I just know like that was so ingrained in my head. Like this is it. If I eat this many and I gotta burn this off, or it's like this whole calculation, right? And I know now I hear a whole different number. Like I'm well, what? It scares me. But people are really like hard pressed to let go of whatever they have ingrained in there, and they're scared to like go over that. And I'm just wondering like what you see and how you help people like get past the calorie counting and holding on to the calories.
I was a calorie counter myself. I also got into macro counting and everything. So I was very specific. And it's so funny because often I'll talk to people and they will say that the number was pretty arbitrary, or they honestly don't even remember where they got it, whether it be social media or the calculator app or whatever it is. And that's the same for me. So then when they recognize that, it can be different, I think, for every person, because some people, I find if you just provide them with different information and you kind of help them to see, hey, this is contradicting what you actually want, they can kind of recognize that logically and then move past it. But a lot of the times, I do find that it's due to something even deeper than the calories themselves. It's what it signifies to the person. So for me, I didn't even know what I was so afraid of. I do find I was just really attached to the perfectionistic nature of it. And then I also have found, and this was not something I recognized when I was within this stage of my life, but as I've worked with other clients, I think they really feel it like a true threat. Like it's almost as if their nervous system is perceiving it like there's a bear chasing after them if they try to go over this calorie level, and it's that level of distress that's just so hard. So it's almost as if the number itself at that point becomes completely dismissed, and it's more so the feeling of even trying to break this number that they've created and what that means to them.
Yeah, I talk to obviously a lot of people, right? And it's like this belief, like if I eat over this number, I am guaranteed I'm going, like, I went over, I have to compensate, like, I have to go burn this off. Or even the thought of like all of that sitting there waiting for me to go do something to burn it off. Like, there's not a concept of like my body's actually using the fuel or the food like immediately to keep me alive, right? It's like this interesting concept of like, okay, I'm calculating it, now I gotta hit like a zero, if
Oh.
that makes sense.
It makes total sense. And I find too that it just brings up so many emotions a lot of time when you break it, like you're saying. So then people go to how do I manage those emotions? Kind of back to what we were talking about before. Okay, well, I exercise or I control what I eat more. So it creates that cycle that never feels like it ends when you're in it. And I totally get it. When you those emotions are so strong, and for me, I did so much numbing over so many years, and when it would bring me out of that place of numbness, I just could not tolerate that.
You know, I hear from people like these apps that kind of created this, I call it like the bulimic, mindset, right? I think a lot of these apps like MyFitnessPal and Noom and all this like create that mentality of like, oh, if you ate this much, then you can earn more food if you like work out this much, right? Or so for anyone listening who's been on those, like I think that maybe created some of the mentality, right? And it's dangerous. I think that's dangerous. I don't know if you have any thoughts on those, but
Yeah, I was on MyFitnessPal. I've also worked with tons of people that have been on it and Noom, and I continue to see the same challenges over and over again with them. I mean, I was in sports before as well, and I remember I was interning somewhere at a very prestigious athletic university, and they had the red, yellow, green on their foods. And even I know for a fact from talking to some of the athletes that it affected their mindsets around food. And I think that just speaks to the fact that any type of system that's designed to, in some way, moralize food rather than really educate around the food, I find is just not effective because you're creating an emotional connection to the food that doesn't need to be there, when instead we could look at it from a new, more neutral point of view. And these apps or these other systems, or even a lot of what we see online from people educating, quote unquote, about food, it doesn't actually have the tone of true education from an unbiased point of view.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes, exactly. And I'm older, right? So all I remember is having this red book that had all the calorie counts and the this and the that. And it was like very much instilled, like, if you eat the low glycemic foods, you're better and like you're more quote unquote healthy and all this. And so I just had it, the perfectionist in me obviously was like, I'm only gonna eat the low glycemic. And if you eat the high glycemic, all hell's gonna break loose, right? And it's like just breaking that and realizing like that's a horrible message, because it did have that moralistic thought pattern of like, this is bad, this is good. Oh, if I do this, I'm good, I'm okay, I'm safe, I can breathe. But the reality is it didn't matter because my body did what it was gonna do. And then I was confused and was like, what am I doing wrong? I'm failing. Oh my gosh, right? And all it did was bring me down this dark hole of hell of like more restriction and trying to figure out more ways to do something more right, or and none of it made any sense. And I think that's maybe what happens to a lot of people, is they're like, wait, this isn't working. Let me try the next thing. Let me try this. Let me try, and there's constantly seeking some rule or some way that's going to work, whatever working means. And it's all arbitrary, to your point.
Yeah, it's so in line with what I was getting at some earlier. It's like we desperately just want food to be something we can get right or wrong, and yet that is just not how it works. I remember there was this client that I worked with, and she had shared with me, this was before we were working together, that she was trying so hard to hit the specific amounts on every category in MyFitnessPal that she was very stringent about the sodium. And she would always hit the sodium, and she actually was admitted to the hospital because she had such a severe electrolyte imbalance. And I think that's a good example of the fact that just because we have these standards that are developed through averages of looking at a bunch of different people, it does not mean that is what is going to work for us, whether it be talking about salt or it's talking about a food or it's talking about the way food's going to affect your blood sugar. We really don't know because it's not going to be the same for all of us. We all have different genetics, we all have different experiences. And also your mindset going into eating that. If you're super stressed, it's not going to react as well in your body as if you're actually more calm. So there's just so many layers to it.
So I can imagine like people listening, and I find this, they're like, oh my gosh, so now I'm more confused. Like, I don't know what to eat. I don't know what to do. I feel like it's free falling. Like, give me some answers. Like, I don't know if you get people that feel that way.
Yeah, I definitely get people that feel that way. And I understand it too, because that was how I felt. I felt like I had this list of things that I would exactly follow. And then as I was going through recovery, for them to just say, well, you just eat whatever it is that you want. I'm like, well, I don't know what I want. I don't even know when I'm hungry. I don't know when I'm full. And that's why I'm always talking about the fact that it's a process with my clients and not in a way of, oh, it's going to take forever. But more so, I think a lot of the time, at least for people I work with, I don't know if you find the same. I'm someone that often needs to feel like I get the big picture and then I can feel comfortable with taking the steps. So I always say, like, first, let's just work on, okay, we'll be helping your body to start to get more hunger and fullness cues through eating consistently. And during that time, we can explore different types of foods and so on and so forth. And I can share more about that. I don't think there's one perfect system, but I do think no matter what, it's important to not get overwhelmed that it goes from every single rule to nothing all at the same time. You can kind of step through it in a way that feels like it's more manageable and understandable.
People are probably like, please go more into that.
Oh my gosh. I have my system of what I explain is what happens. So I say it kind of happens in these six steps, depending on where the person is actually at. So I say the first step is that we clear or we calm the food mind loop. So this is where, when you have so much information from diet culture and social media in your head, I find we can find so much more mental peace when we literally just start to shut those things out through getting the proper information. And then from there, we can really build into the biggest, what I would say is often hurdle for people, which is awakening and understanding their body's wisdom. So, like we were talking about, I find that the biggest thing that prevents people from moving forward after they feel they have more mental clarity is the fear of weight gain. So, I love to talk about their set point weight and how that works and understanding their metabolism and kind of taking away some of the deeper fears of, I'm going to keep gaining weight forever if I do this. I don't know if you see people that feel that way when
Oh,
they talk
yeah.
about it. Yeah.
Yeah. But they also just like, I don't want to gain any, right? Like we talked about
Yeah.
before, or I ruined my metabolism. Like, screw it. Like, what did I do? Like, is it ever going to go back? Like, oh, I get all these questions, right? Yeah. So.
Yeah, exactly. So I find if we can kind of help them to see that, and I always say too, which I think is important and sounds like we're both on this experience people with this. I say you don't even know what's going to happen to your body. You don't know if it's going to gain weight or if it's not, at least for the people I'm working with. So what if we just started to try and see what it was like? Even if we just start to think about the mindset piece of it over other things. And then the third step is more along the lines of, I call it finding your eating rhythm, because I think that a lot of the times we're told, similar to what we're talking about, that there's a right or wrong way to eat. Okay, you need to have this small, many small meals in a day or this many big meals. Like, let's figure out what works for you that's still eating consistently. Because then the biggest thing that prevents people, I find, from being able to eat intuitively or to just feel like they know what they want is not being able to feel their hunger fullness cues. So that's what I call opening the brain to body channel, where we help your body and brain to start communicating with each other again. I don't know if you felt that, but I felt like I only ate systematically. I just ate because I thought I should eat at certain times. So when I was trying to open up to eating at different times, I was like, well, I don't even know what that would really consist of. I don't know if you had anything similar in your journey or with your clients.
Yeah, my journey, it was definitely just regimented by like whatever I was following at the time. I was very like perfectionistic with that. But yeah, with my clients, it's all over the map. Some people have rules from childhood where it's like I eat at a certain time only, or you know, they think starving is hunger. They don't even know what hunger feels like. So like they only eat when they're feeling starving, or like a lot of people think coffee is breakfast. So like they'll have coffee and then they won't eat all day and then they'll like binge at night, or like, I mean, everybody's kind of all over the map. So I, even with that, it's like, yeah, I take each person where they're at because everybody's got their own rules, their own histories, their own stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's the same thing that I see. And I think that when we talk about even experiencing guilt and different stuff, when you're trying to eat when you're not hungry or when you binge because you were starving or whatever it is, it just can multiply those feelings. So even just starting to really cultivate the feeling of true hunger and understand what that's like can be so powerful. I mean, I remember feeling like I was a bottomless pit and I would never stop eating. But then I realized when I actually recovered that that's really not true. I just felt that way because of all of my restrictions.
Yeah, exactly.
So for me, just to complete it, the last two steps that I say are the rewiring your food lens, which goes into everything that we're talking about. It's around fear of weight gain and why you feel out of control around food, these coping things, identity, anything that affects the way that you view food that makes it not feel neutral, where there's not good and bad connotations to it. And then that final step is turning on your balanced intuition. So I think a lot of people feel a lot of fear around intuitive eating. Not that I think you have to define yourself that way, because they think, well, if I eat intuitively, I'm only going to eat unhealthy and I'm never going to stop eating. I'm just going to gain weight forever. But that's when we don't have really gentle nutrition a part of it, or when we don't have an idea of what your hunger and fullness cues are, what you really want. And I think we were already talking about this earlier, but I really do find that finding the way that we want to eat and that makes us feel good allows for us to thrive and totally coincides with you feeling your healthiest. That's at least when I felt my healthiest, was not with arbitrary rules, but truly with figuring out how to nourish myself without any restrictions around it or good and bad connotations, like I was just speaking to. So I don't know if there's things you would even add into that, but that's kind of the six steps that I walk through, because I feel like it's easier when we have a step-by-step process we can at least identify ourselves in at some point.
Yeah, I love your steps. Thank you for sharing. Because I think they're, you know, just calling things out and addressing like the fears and having that conversation. I think a lot of people don't even realize they have them. And just also acknowledging like you're so afraid of these things that may or may not happen, right? But the reality is you're miserable right now. So how much worse can it get? I mean, right.
Exactly. I mean, that is the best way to put it, because I just realized there was this quote that I saw too that, gosh, I'm not remembering it exactly, but it's basically like when you realize that no one was ever jealous of you for your ED, but you were always jealous of them for everything they had. And I was like, that is literally so true, because I kept thinking, well, when I just change my body enough and when I just have this, then I'm gonna feel so good and everyone's gonna just be so jealous. The point never came. It never existed when I felt that way. So
Yeah, I know. I thought that too at one point. I was like, I'm waiting for my life to start, but I'm not having a life this whole time. Like, I'm so isolated. And wait a minute, I could have had a life this whole time. What am I doing?
yeah, and for me too, it was very connected to what men thought of me, because I was in college and in high school, and I remember thinking, okay, well, I have to have my body like this because otherwise no one's going to find me attractive. And I remember there was this guy that I was talking to at some point. I never really talked about my food stuff, and I think it was that he like wanted to go out to get something to eat, and I was like, oh, I can't do that. And he was just basically said, of course, like typical guy in college, he's like, you really have a lot of issues with that. Doesn't seem very fun. So true. You are right. It's not very fun. And I don't know why that moment just stuck with me, but it's just interesting because I think I thought he would think I was so disciplined, and he just thought, wow, that's really kind of sad that you have to do that.
Well, light bulb moments, right?
Exactly.
Sticks out. Oh, goodness. Yeah. I mean, it's for anyone who's listening who's kind of struggling with this and maybe hearing some of yourself and maybe what we're talking about. I'm wondering if, you want to work with Mallory. Like, how can they find you? How can they work with you?
Yeah, well, you can totally just get into my world for free because I know, like we're talking about, sometimes there can be a barrier. So
Yeah.
I have a free community group, and in that, I also have free trainings that explain actually this six-step process that I talked about. So if that was catching your interest, you can always join in to that. And honestly, you can find everything about me from my Instagram. It's kind of my main hub, which is just my name, Mallory J. Page. And from there, you'll see my programs. I have Live Unrestricted, which is my signature program. I have a membership that's only $11 a month, a podcast called Seems Like Diet Culture. So all the things, but really anything that serves and supports you, even if it's just shooting a DM to chat about something that came up, I'm always here to do any of that and just want to help more people be free of this stuff.
That's amazing. And you're so down to earth, so that helps too. I think it's very easy to, work with someone who you can relate to. So, thank you so very much. I really appreciate you being here, being so genuine and, giving so much information out to people who really need it. So, thank you so for everything you're doing.
Well, thank you for everything you're doing and for having me. It's been so fun.
That's great. Thank you, Mallory.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castanini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network and produced by the Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners. So if you like the show, please like, rate, and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional, you should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situation. Thank you.